For the last decade or so, you have probably been told that a supercomputer is automatically throwing like 75% of your resume straight into the digital
Oh,
crabs.
yeah, the classic supercomputer myth.
Right. You've been sold by career coaches, by, university career centers, massive business magazines that you absolutely have to hack the applicant tracking system.
You have to optimize your keywords.
Exactly. You have to beat the AI to even have a tiny chance of a human being glancing at your name. Well, today we are going to prove to you that the supercomputer is basically a ghost.
There really is.
That 75% statistic, it is a complete fabrication. And the real reason you aren't getting hired right now is actually, it's a problem of human exhaustion. Welcome to the deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
We have a massive stack of research to get through today. I mean, it's a lot.
We really do. We are pulling from this landmark 2022 paper published in the journal Science, which analyzed 20 million LinkedIn users.
20 million. That's insane.
Yeah, it's one of the largest studies on job mobility ever conducted. And we also have raw pipeline data from Resume Adapter.
So that's the data showing how these systems actually work.
Exactly, how applicant tracking systems actually function under the hood. Plus, we've got advice from career strategists like Liz Ryan and some really incredibly candid, maybe slightly controversial insights from ex-Google recruiters and active hiring managers.
Okay, so my mission for us today is to completely deconstruct the modern job hunt. If you are sitting there listening to this and you are exhausted, just absolutely drained from sending hundreds of applications into the void and hearing nothing back, we are going to look at the exact mechanics of why the front door to these companies is just totally barricaded.
And then we're going to give you a mathematically backed playbook to find the side window.
I love that. So let's just start with the reality of the market right now. The landscape we are looking at requires a total shift in strategy, right?
It absolutely does, because the
Okay.
sheer volume of the current market has completely broken the traditional hiring infrastructure. All right, let's just look at the baseline environment.
Set the stage for us.
Well, there were over 1 million job cuts announced in the tech sector and adjacent industries in 2025 alone.
A million.
Yeah. According to Challenger Gray and Christmas, that is a high watermark we haven't seen since the peak panic of the 2020 pandemic.
So we basically have this massive influx of highly qualified, somewhat desperate people flooding the market all at exactly the same time.
Right, and that creates this terrifying knock-on effect. LinkedIn's own internal platform research shows that the number of applications per open role has effectively doubled since the spring of 2022.
Doubled.
Doubled. You have a scenario right now where, say, a hiring manager posts a relatively standard mid-level role, right? They are receiving on the order of 1,000 applications a day.
Wait, hold on. I need to stop you there. 1,000 a day.
1,000 a day.
If I post a job for like a marketing manager, you're telling me 1,000 human beings are sitting down, reading my job description, tailoring their resume, and hitting apply every 24 hours? The math on that just feels completely impossible.
Well, you're right. The math is impossible for human beings. And that leads us to the critical variable that has fundamentally poisoned the well here, the epidemic of AI auto-apply tools.
Okay, for the non-engineers listening, and honestly for me, what exactly is an AI auto-apply tool? Are we talking about a smart script or like a literal robot filling out forms?
They're essentially software wrappers powered by large language models.
Wrappers, what does that mean?
Think of a software wrapper as a program that sits on top of another application. It's like an invisible layer between the user and the website.
Okay, I'm tracking.
So a job seeker signs up for one of these services, they upload their base resume, and they give the software permission to act on their behalf. The bot then crawls job boards 24 hours a day.
Just constantly looking.
Exactly. When it finds a job that vaguely matches the user's parameters, it uses AI to instantly rewrite the user's resume to include the job description's keywords. It generates a custom cover letter and it submits the application.
While the applicant is asleep.
While they're asleep, while they're at the grocery store, whatever, a single applicant can blast out 5,000 highly customized applications in a week without ever reading a single job description.
Oh my God. That sounds like a complete nightmare for the person on the receiving end.
It is.
If I'm the hiring manager, my inbox is just a landfill of synthetic garbage.
And employers are not just passively taking the hit either. There's a massive, invisible defensive arms race happening right now.
What do you mean by defensive arms race?
Well, enterprise applicant tracking systems, the ATS platforms companies use to manage hiring, like Greenhouse, Workday, or Lover, they've had to build in military-grade defenses. they are actively deploying fraud detection and velocity tracking tools.
Velocity tracking. So wait, they're treating a job application the way my credit card company treats a suspicious purchase in another country.
That is the perfect way to understand it. Yes. If an enterprise system detects that your specific IP address is applying to 40 different roles across 3 different time zones in the span of 45 seconds, you trigger a velocity flag.
Because the system knows a human being cannot physically read and interact with web pages that fast.
Right. It's physically impossible.
So what happens when you get flagged? Do they just send you an automated rejection email?
It is often way worse than a rejection. You get quarantined.
Quarantined? Like your application goes into a penalty box?
Sort of. The IT department might actually flag your profile as a cybersecurity threat, assuming you are a malicious bot trying to probe their network vulnerabilities.
Wow. Over job application.
Yeah. Furthermore, these systems are scanning the metadata of your resume documents.
What are they looking for in the metadata?
If your metadata claims the document was created in a time zone that wildly contradicts your stated address, or if the text contains telltale semantic patterns of generic AI generation, like down to the overuse of certain adverbs or unnaturally inflated metrics, you are flagged.
So the whole system is just completely broken at this point.
Essentially, yes.
Employers fundamentally distrust inbound applications because they assume most of them are fake synthetic spam. And then the genuine applicant, the person who actually sat down for an hour to write a thoughtful cover letter, feels completely ignored because their genuine application is just buried under a mountain of bot-generated noise.
Exactly. The current setup is optimized purely for volume management, not for finding the best talent. It's a purely defensive posture.
I am stuck on something here, though. This is probably the perfect time to bring up the elephant in the room.
Let's do it.
You mentioned applicant tracking systems, the ATS. Whenever I talk to someone looking for a job, they always complain about the ATS auto-rejecting them. I mean, the conventional wisdom out there is that if you don't have the exact right keywords, the ATS just throws your resume in the trash before a human ever sees it.
We have to dismantle this idea completely.
Yeah.
You are referring to a very specific statistic that has haunted the internet for over a decade.
Yeah, I feel like I see it every single day on LinkedIn.
The claim is almost always phrased exactly like this.
Yeah.
75% of resumes are auto-rejected by an ATS before a human ever sees them.
Yes. That's the exact phrasing. I've read that on Forbes. I've seen it on major news networks. People build entire consulting businesses around teaching you how to beat the 75% auto rejection.
Well, I have incredible news for anyone listening who is stressed over that statistic. It is a ghost. It's entirely fabricated.
Wait, you're telling me every major publication has been lying to us for a decade? How does a fake stat survive that long without someone fact-checking it?
Because fear sells, right? And in the digital age, a cited statistic rarely gets traced back to its root.
So where did it come from?
The investigation into the origin of this number is fascinating. Researchers went digging, trying to find the peer-reviewed study or the massive survey of HR professionals that produced this 75% figure.
And what did they find?
There was no study. There was no survey. It traces back to the year 2012 to a sales pitch from a small tech startup called Prepto.
A sales pitch? You are kidding me.
Nope. Prepto was trying to launch a resume optimization tool. To sell their cure, they needed a terrifying disease.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
So their marketing materials boldly claimed that 75% of resumes were never seen by human eyes. It was a completely unverified anecdotal claim meant to scare job seekers into buying their software.
What happened to Prepto? Are they still around?
No, they shut down in 2013. They existed for barely a year and never published a single shred of methodology or data.
But the statistic escaped the lab anyway.
Exactly. In 2014, a contributor cited the number in an article on Forbes without verifying its origin. Once it had the veneer of a major publication, it became gospel.
It's just a giant game of telephone.
From Forbes, it went to CIO.com, then CNBC, and eventually trickled down to thousands of career blogs, TikTok influencers, and university pamphlets. The company that invented the lie doesn't even exist anymore, but millions of job seekers are still terrified of their ghost.
I am genuinely angry about that.
It's incredibly frustrating.
Think about the millions of collective hours people have wasted over the last 10 years agonizing over their margins and keyword density because of a fake marketing pitch from a defunct startup.
Wasted hours, wasted anxiety.
So if the ATS isn't an evil robot auto-rejecting 75% of us, what is actually happening to all these resumes? Give me the real data.
Okay, let's look at the verified pipeline data from Resume Adapter for the first quarter of 2026. They analyze how these enterprise systems are actually configured by the companies using them.
So real hard data.
Yes. And yes, 98% of Fortune 500 companies use an ATS. It's a necessary filing cabinet. But 92% of those systems do not configure any content-based auto rejection.
92%.
Right. They do not have a robot reading your bullet points, judging your experience, and throwing you in the digital trash.
If they aren't auto-rejecting based on content, what is the software actually doing when I hit submit? What's its purpose?
It parses, it ranks, and it sorts. The system extracts the text from your PDF and puts it into a standardized digital profile so the recruiter doesn't have to open 1,000 differently formatted documents.
Okay, that just sounds like basic data entry.
It is. The only things that cause an automatic hard rejection are what the industry calls knockout questions.
What does a knockout question look like?
They are binary hard minimums established by legal or compliance departments. Like, do you have legal work authorization in the United States?
Or like, are you over the age of 18?
Exactly. Do you hold an active registered nursing license in the state of California? If you click no on a knockout question, yes, the system will auto-reject you because legally or functionally, you cannot be hired.
That makes total sense.
But beyond those simple checkboxes, the ATS is just serving your resume up to a human being.
Okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
If 92% of these systems aren't auto-rejecting me, why am I still not getting any calls? If my resume is actually making it to a human, why am I still sitting in total silence?
Because the real bottleneck isn't a heartless, ultra-fast supercomputer.
Mm.
It is a severely fatigued, incredibly slow human being.
Human exhaustion.
You have to put yourself in the shoes of a corporate recruiter. The average corporate job gets 250 legitimate applications, and that's after filtering out the bot spam we talked about earlier.
250.
And a recruiter is typically managing 20 to 40 open roles at any given time.
So they have thousands of resumes sitting in their queue every single week. How do they even process that?
They barely do. There was a famous eye-tracking study conducted by a company called The Ladders. They used visual heat maps to see exactly what recruiters look at and for how long.
Oh, I love these kinds of studies. What did they find?
They found that a recruiter spends a median of just 7.4 seconds reviewing a resume on their first pass.
7.4 seconds. That is devastating.
It really is.
You spend hours writing it, tailoring every bullet point, and they don't even give it 8 seconds.
It's pure triage. It is not malice, and it's not carelessness. It is just human attention scarcity under massive volume.
So what are they even looking at in 7 seconds?
When they look at the heat map, the recruiter's eyes are scanning in an F pattern. They look at your current job title, your current company, your previous job title, the dates of employment, and your education. That takes about 7 seconds.
And if they don't like what they see?
If those data points don't immediately align with what they need, they click to the next profile.
Okay, wait. Earlier you said the ATS parses and ranks. How does the ranking part work if it's not rejecting people? Does that ranking influence the human?
Yes. And here is where the ATS actually does hurt you, but not in the malicious way people think. The ATS will generate a match score to help the recruiter prioritize which resumes to look at first.
So it sorts the pile.
Right. It might sort the pile so the recruiter sees the 90% matches before the 40% matches.
That makes sense. It's just trying to be helpful to the exhausted recruiter.
But the parsing technology is incredibly literal. It is generally not semantic.
Semantic meaning like understanding the context.
Right. Semantic means understanding the meaning behind the words. Literal means exact string matching.
Give me an example of how that messes people up.
So if the hiring manager wrote a job description asking for someone with people management experience, and your resume says you led a cross-functional team of 12, the ATS does not recognize that as a match.
Even though any human reading that knows it means the exact same thing, leading a team is people management.
Exactly. The software is quite dumb in that regard.
Mm.
Resume Adapter's data shows that 52% of the core keywords in a standard job description are missing from the average unoptimized resume, even when the candidate is highly qualified for the role.
Because they just used a different word.
The skills absolutely exist in the candidate's history, but the vocabulary doesn't match verbatim. Because of this, 51% of resumes score below a 50 out of 100 on their ATS compatibility score.
This is a massive paradigm shift.
It completely changes how you have to look at the process.
Discovering that the 75% auto rejection stat is a myth doesn't mean the system is working well. In a weird way, it actually strengthens the case for completely bypassing the front door.
Absolutely.
You aren't fighting a supercomputer that you can outsmart with secret code. You are fighting human exhaustion. You are fighting a recruiter who has 39 other open jobs, 1,000 resumes a day, and 7.4 seconds to look at yours. And yours probably got shoved to the bottom of the pile because you used a synonym instead of the exact noun they typed in the job description.
That is the core takeaway right there. The digital gateway is designed to manage the employer's overwhelm, not to find the best candidate.
So, if the standard job board is just a bottleneck of human fatigue and literal-minded software, what does the data say actually works to get a job? If the front door is jammed, where is the side window?
We have to look at the conversion contrast to really understand where the leverage is. If you apply through a standard job board, the baseline statistics show that your application converts to an actual hire at a rate of roughly 2 to 5%.
2 to 5%. So you basically have to send 100 resumes just to theoretically get 2 to 5 wins, assuming perfect, statistically even distribution.
Right. Now, contrast that with candidates who come into the process via a referral.
Okay, what's the referral rate?
A referred candidate converts to a hire at roughly 28%.
28% compared to 2%. That isn't just an improvement. That's an entirely different game.
It is a staggering difference. Referrals make up only about 7% of the total applicant pool, but they account for roughly 40% of all actual hires.
40% of hires from just 7% of the pool?
Furthermore, hiring a referred candidate drops the time to hire from an average of 42 days down to 29 days. Employers love referrals because it saves them immense amounts of time, it bypasses the bot spam, it saves them recruiting money, and referred candidates tend to be stronger cultural fits with higher long-term retention rates.
Okay, the data is screaming at us, get a referral. But that's the age-old problem, right? It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Exactly.
What if you are listening to this and you don't know anyone at the company you want to work for? What if you are trying to break into a new industry or you just moved to a new city?
This is where we turn to the most fascinating piece of research in our stack today.
The science paper.
Yes. In 2022, the journal Science published a landmark study by Karthik Rajkumar and colleagues, a team of scientists from MIT, Stanford, Harvard, and LinkedIn.
That is a heavy-hitting lineup.
It is. And this wasn't just a survey where they asked people how they got their jobs. This was the first large-scale, experimental, causal test of job mobility in history.
I want to dig into that word causal. What makes a study causal rather than just a regular survey? Why is that a big deal?
Most studies in social science are observational. Researchers observe data. They see that people with a lot of friends get a lot of jobs, but they can't mathematically prove that the friends caused the jobs.
Because maybe those people are just super outgoing anyway.
Right. Maybe they are highly extroverted or ambitious or went to an elite university. There are too many confounding variables. But this team actually worked with LinkedIn to run a 5-year randomized set of controlled experiments on 20 million users.
Wait, LinkedIn let researchers experiment on 20 million people. How did they even do that?
They tweaked the algorithm, specifically the people you may know algorithm, that feature on your dashboard that recommends new connections to you.
Oh, I get those all the time. It always suggests my old college roommates or someone I worked with 10 years ago.
Exactly. So for some randomly selected users, the algorithm pushed strong tie recommendations.
Strong ties meaning?
These are people you have a ton of mutual friends with, people you interact with intensely, or people who share your exact immediate network.
Like my best friend or my current boss.
Right. For other randomly selected users, the algorithm pushed weak tie recommendations. These are acquaintances, people you have very few mutual friends with, or people you rarely interact with.
Okay, so they fed different people different types of connections.
Over 5 years, this controlled experiment generated 2 billion new ties and resulted in 600,000 new jobs.
That scale is mind-blowing. 2 billion new ties. So what did they actually find? Who gets you the job? Is it your best friend or is it a total stranger?
Neither. What the researchers discovered was an inverted U relationship between the strength of the tie and job mobility.
An inverted U, like a bell curve.
Picture a bell curve. On the far left of the curve, you have your closest friends and immediate colleagues, your strong ties. The data showed they didn't increase job mobility much at all.
Why not? I would think my best friend would be the first person to get me a job. They trust me the most.
They do trust you, but they lack novel information. This goes back to a famous sociological theory from 1973 by Mark Granovetter, which this study finally proved at scale.
What's the theory?
You and your best friend run in the same circles. You know the same people, you hear the same rumors, you see the same opportunities. If your best friend knew about a job opening, you probably already knew about it too. There is no new information crossing that bridge.
Oh, wow. That makes total sense. We're in the exact same bubble.
Exactly. Now look at the far right side of the bell curve. You have total strangers or incredibly weak people you have zero mutual friends with, maybe someone you passed on the street.
And I'm guessing they didn't help much either.
They also didn't increase job mobility. Why? Because while they might have access to novel information, there isn't enough trust or social capital for them to stick their neck out and refer you to their boss.
Because they don't know me. I could be terrible at my job.
Right. So where is the peak of the curve? What is the sweet spot?
Let me guess. The middle.
The peak of the inverted U, the zone that generated the absolute highest rate of job transmission, was moderately weak ties.
Moderately weak ties?
These are acquaintances. A former coworker from a different department 5 years ago. A friend of a friend. Someone you share maybe 10 mutual connections with, but you don't talk to them every week.
Why is that specific level of connection so powerful?
Because moderately weak ties act as bridges to entirely new, novel clusters of information and opportunity outside your immediate bubble. They know about jobs you would never see.
But they still know me a little bit.
Crucially, yes. They still have just enough of a social connection to you, just enough shared context to feel comfortable vouching for you.
It is the Goldilocks zone of networking. Not your spouse, not a complete stranger, but an acquaintance.
And the researchers found that this effect was particularly dominant in digital, highly robotized, and software-intensive tech industries.
Really? Why in tech specifically?
In sectors where the AI resume bots and the applicant tracking systems are the most aggressive, adding moderately weak ties created the greatest marginal increase in job applications and successful hires. The more digital the wall, the more valuable the human bridge.
I am sitting here thinking about how empowering this is. The science literally proves that the most powerful engine for your career isn't blasting 1,000 resumes to a robot, and it isn't waiting for your best friend to hire you. It's building moderately weak ties.
That's the secret.
But here's the practical problem. If I am listening to this and I want to work at a specific tech company, but I don't have a moderately weak tie there, how do I manufacture one? How do I create a relationship out of thin air that leads to a job?
Well, if we know that the front door is jammed and we know that a weak tie is the key to the side window, we need a step-by-step process for manually building that tie.
We have to move from the theory to the mechanics of going direct.
Exactly.
Walk me through it. Let's role play this. Let's say I am a clinical project manager looking for a job at a mid-sized healthcare tech company. I see the job posted on their website. What is my very first move?
Your first move is finding the hiring manager. You do not contact the recruiter, and you do not contact the human resources department.
Wait, why not? Aren't they literally the people whose entire job is hiring?
HR facilitates the hiring process. They manage the paperwork and the compliance. But the person who actually feels the pain of the empty desk, the person who actually has the budget and the final decision-making power, is the hiring manager.
So I need to go straight to the boss.
You are boss hunting. As Lucy from the Career Growth YouTube channel points out in our sources, if you message a recruiter directly on LinkedIn, they will almost certainly just send you a polite reply telling you to go apply via the company website.
Because their inbox is already a nightmare, and their literal job is to corral everyone into the applicant tracking system.
Yes. They want everyone in the funnel. Your goal is to bypass the funnel entirely. So, to boss hunt, you go to the company's LinkedIn page. You do not click apply on the job posting.
Okay. Ignoring the apply button.
You click on the company's people tab. This brings up a directory of everyone who works there. You use the search bar to look for the likely title of your future boss.
So it requires a little bit of common sense and corporate deductive reasoning.
Exactly. If you are applying to be a clinical project manager, you might search for Director of Clinical Operations or VP of Clinical Operations.
What if I'm looking for a sales role?
If you are applying to be a sales development representative, you look for the SDR manager or the Director of Outbound Sales. If you are applying to be an e-commerce manager, look for the VP of Digital Strategy.
What if it's a really small company, like a 50-person startup?
In that case, the hiring manager might literally be the founder or the CEO. You are looking for the person whose daily life is negatively impacted by the fact that your job is currently empty.
Okay, I find them. Then what?
Once you identify that person on LinkedIn, you move to the next phase, getting the email.
I have a question about that. I have a premium LinkedIn account. I have in-mail credits. Why go through the trouble of finding their email when I can just send them a direct message on LinkedIn?
You can. And some data shows that very short in-mails do have a passable response rate. However, LinkedIn inboxes for executives and managers are increasingly becoming a chaotic mess of vendor spam, automated sales pitches, and recruiters trying to poach them.
Yeah, my inbox is full of people trying to sell me software.
A lot of managers just tune it out completely. The hiring manager lives and breathes in their professional work email inbox. That is where internal meetings get scheduled, budgets get approved, and real business gets done. You want to be in the inbox where the work happens.
I understand the logic, but how do I get their work email if it isn't publicly listed on their LinkedIn profile? Like 10 years ago, you had to call the corporate switchboard and pretend to be a vendor, or you had to guess the format like first.lastname at company.com and just pray it didn't bounce back.
Oh, the technology has completely changed since then. Use free Chrome extensions. There are tools like Adapt, Hunter.io, ContactOut, or MailScoop.
Explain to me how those actually work. Is it just guessing? Is it legal?
It is entirely legal. These tools are essentially massive data aggregators and scrapers. They scrape publicly available information across the internet, cross-reference it with known corporate email formats, and use server pinging to verify if an email address is active without actually sending an email.
Oh, so they test the email behind the scenes.
Right. You just have the manager's LinkedIn profile open, you click the extension icon in your browser, and it spits out their verified professional email address with a very high degree of accuracy.
Does it cost money?
Most of these tools offer a certain number of free lookups per month, which is honestly more than enough for a targeted job search.
That feels almost like a superpower. Okay, so I have used deductive reasoning to find the VP of clinical operations. I used Hunter.io to get her verified work email. Now comes the most intimidating part.
Writing the message.
What do I say? Because my immediate fear, and I'm sure the listener feels this imposter syndrome too, is that I am going to annoy this person. I am a stranger interrupting their day. If I just attach my resume and say, please hire me, I'm great, I'm going straight to the trash folder.
That fear is completely valid. If you send a generic plea for a job, you will be deleted and you will be annoyed. This is where we draw on Liz Ryan's concept of the pain letter and the cold email templates from Austin Belkac at Cultivated Culture.
What's the secret?
The absolute golden rule of this outreach is extreme brevity. Your message must be incredibly short, well under 125 words.
125 words? That's basically a long text message. I can't even list my job history in that space.
That is exactly the point. You do not list your job history. Mm. You are interrupting their day.
Yeah.
So you have to respect their time. You must treat them like a peer, like a fellow professional, not like a supplicant begging for a favor.
So no, to whom it may concern, and a big block of text.
Do not attach a generic 3-page cover letter. A pain letter fundamentally flips the script of the job hunt. Instead of talking about your history, you talk about their problem.
Break down the anatomy of a perfect pain letter for me. Give me the formula.
The three main components. First is the hook. You start by acknowledging them as a human being in their specific context.
Like what?
You can simply confirm the job is still open. Something like, hi, Sarah. I saw the recent posting for a clinical project manager. Are you still hiring for this? Or you can congratulate them on a recent piece of company news to prove you aren't a bot and you've done your research.
Got it. Hook them with something relevant to them.
Second is the pain hypothesis. This is the core engine of this strategy. You have to show that you understand the business pain behind the job ad.
Business pain.
Companies do not hire people because they have extra money lying around and want a new friend in the office. They hire because something is broken, something is delayed, or they are losing money. You formulate a hypothesis about what their specific pain is.
How do I know what their pain is if I don't work there?
You research, you read their recent quarterly earnings calls, you read industry news, or you just read between the lines of the job description.
Okay, reading between the lines. Give me an example.
If the job description mentions streamlining cross-departmental communication 4 times, their pain is that their departments are siloed and chaotic.
Oh, that's smart.
So you write, I know that as you scale your clinical trials into Europe, standardizing the compliance reporting is usually a massive bottleneck that delays launch dates.
Listening to you explain this, it makes me think of a house on fire.
How so?
If I walk up to a burning house and the owner is standing out front panicking, I don't walk up and hand them a 10-page essay about my history of fighting fires in three different states. I just hand them a hose. I solve their immediate pain.
That is a phenomenal metaphor. Yes, you are offering the hose. You follow your pain hypothesis with a very brief dragon slaying story.
A dragon slaying story? I love that name.
It's a one-sentence proof that you have solved this exact pain before. You write, "In my last role at TechHealth, I built a reporting system that cut our European compliance turnaround time by 40%.
The hose works. I proved it.
Exactly. And the final component is the call to action. Do not make heavy demands on their time. Do not say, please let me know when you have 30 minutes to interview me.
Because they don't have 30 minutes.
Make it incredibly low friction. Cultivated culture recommends keeping it completely open. If this warrants a conversation, my resume is attached. If not, I'll be following your product launch next quarter."
So the whole email reads something like, "Hi, Sarah. Saw you're still hiring a clinical project manager. I know scaling trials into Europe usually causes massive bottlenecks with compliance reporting. I ran into this at my last company and built a system that cut our turnaround time by 40%. If this sounds like something that warrants a conversation, my resume is attached. Thanks."
That is the entire email. It takes 10 minutes to research and write. It treats the hiring manager as a peer, and it directly addresses their business problem.
What happens if they don't reply, though? Did I just waste my time?
No. Even if they don't have the time to reply immediately, or if company policy dictates they can't interview you directly, you have just manually created a moderately weak tie.
Oh, because now they know my name.
You injected your name and your value into their brain. When HR finally does pass them a stack of 10 resumes that survived the ATS and yours is in it, they will recognize your name. They will say, "Oh, this is the person who knows how to fix the European compliance issue."
This feels so empowering. It feels like taking the steering wheel back. You aren't just a victim of an algorithm anymore. But I have to pump the brakes here.
Sure.
A smart listener is probably thinking, wait a minute. If this is so effective, why isn't everyone doing it? Bypassing the system has to carry some risks. And we need to be intellectually honest here. It does. We need to validate those fears and address the counterarguments. Let's talk about the pushback, because I know there is pushback.
It is vital we address this, because this strategy is not universally beloved by corporate America. There are real potential pitfalls.
What's the biggest one?
The most obvious pushback is that some companies explicitly state on their job postings, "Do not contact hiring managers directly," or "No phone calls, no emails."
I see that all the time, especially with government contractors or big banks. If you bypass the recruiter or the ATS, can you actually get disqualified for not following the rules?
Yes, that absolutely happens. We looked at a very heated comment thread on the Ask the Headhunter forum, which is run by Nick Korkadilos. There was a commenter named Anton who works in finance who laid out the reality of highly regulated industries.
What did Anton say?
He said that in sectors like banking, aerospace, or healthcare, HR has essentially hijacked the hiring process entirely for compliance reasons.
What do you mean by compliance reasons?
In the United States, for example, there are strict equal opportunity employment laws and diversity tracking requirements, especially for federal contractors. HR has to prove there is no cronyism, no nepotism, and no bias in the hiring pipeline.
To avoid getting sued.
Exactly. And to prove that legally, every single candidate must go through the exact same portal, fill out the exact same demographic forms, and be screened by the exact same rubrics.
So if I send a brilliant pain letter to a bank manager, they might read it, love it, but then say, "I legally cannot talk to you until you spend an hour filling out the form on our website." Or worse, HR gets mad that the manager is talking to unvetted candidates and throws my application out.
Yes, that is a very real risk. But Nick Korkadilos, the author of Ask the Headhunter, takes a very strong, somewhat provocative stance on this.
Oh, I like provocative. What's his stance?
He argues that if a hiring manager is forbidden by their own company from devoting time to sourcing talent, or if an employer completely walls off their managers behind an impenetrable HR fortress, you have to ask yourself a serious question as a candidate.
Which is?
Is this a fundamentally flawed organization that you actually want to work for?
Wow. That is a bold take. He's basically saying if they get mad at you for showing initiative and trying to solve their business problem, maybe their culture is toxic.
Korkadilos argues that a good manager should be spending 20% of their time recruiting and building their team. A manager who hides behind an ATS and waits for HR to spoon-feed them candidates is abdicating their core responsibility.
I can see that, but I mean...
Yeah, I have to acknowledge that might be cold comfort to a job seeker who has been unemployed for 6 months and just desperately needs a paycheck to make rent. Beggars can't always be choosers regarding corporate culture.
Exactly. I think we have to weigh the risk logically for the listener. There is a risk here. You might annoy a rigid HR person. You might get disqualified by a strict compliance officer. But let's look at the math again.
The math is key.
If the baseline odds of applying through a job board are 2 to 5%, you are trading the near certainty of being ignored by a robot for the slight risk of being disqualified by a human. It's a calculated bet.
It is a calculated bet, and the math heavily favors taking the risk. And while we are talking about counterarguments, we need to address another very popular concept that career coaches constantly use to sell this exact kind of direct contact strategy.
Oh, I think I know what you're going to say.
You will hear coaches constantly talk about the hidden job market.
Oh, yes. I see this everywhere on LinkedIn and TikTok. People say 70 to 80% of jobs are never posted online. They are entirely hidden, and you have to network to find them.
We have to engage this claim honestly because it is largely a poorly sourced trap. It creates immense anxiety for job seekers who feel like they are locked out of a secret country club.
So it's not true.
We have candid insights from Farah Sharghi, a former recruiter at Google, who breaks this down beautifully. That statistic, that 80% of jobs are hidden, traces back to a study from 1974.
1974. We are basing modern career advice on data from the Nixon administration.
Yes. You have to understand the context of 1974. Why didn't companies post all their jobs publicly back then?
Because the internet didn't exist.
Exactly. If you wanted to post a job, you had to print a classified ad in a physical newspaper, and newspapers charged by the word or by the inch. It was expensive.
Oh my gosh, of course.
So companies would only post the hardest to fill jobs in the paper. Everything else was handled via internal memos, physical bulletin boards in the break room, or word of mouth.
That makes perfect sense for the 70s. But today, posting a job on a company's career page or on LinkedIn is practically frictionless and essentially free.
Exactly. Sharghi points out that when she was at Google, they were not running a secret shadow hiring operation. They posted the jobs. The hidden job market isn't a secret dimension where all the good jobs are kept for the elite. It is simply early access.
Early access? Like getting a VIP presale code to a concert before the general admission tickets go on sale to the public?
That is the perfect way to look at it.
Uh-huh.
A job might be open internally for a week before HR gets around to posting it publicly. Or a manager might know they're going to fire an underperforming vendor next month, so they start having quiet coffees with potential replacements before the job requisition is officially approved.
Ah, so they are sourcing before they officially post it.
Right. Or, as one source pointed out, sometimes a candidate reaches out directly with such an impressive, well-timed pain letter that the company actually creates a brand new role just for them, because they don't want to lose the talent to a competitor.
I love that clarification. So networking and sending these targeted emails isn't about finding a secret, invisible job board. It's about getting to the hiring manager before the general admission gates open and they get crushed by 1,000 AI-generated resumes.
Precisely. You are trying to be the first one through the door before the room fills with smoke. And that brings us to how you actually integrate all this into your daily life. We need to establish a new cadence for the job hunt.
Because the old habit is just doom scrolling. I've been there. It's sitting on the couch at 11 p.m. watching Netflix, just hitting the easy apply button on 50 jobs on LinkedIn and feeling a false sense of productivity. Like, look at me. I applied to 50 jobs today, but it's empty calories.
It is entirely empty calories. You have to stop spamming hundreds of generic applications. You need to completely shift your internal metric of success.
What's the new metric?
The metric is no longer, how many applications did I submit today? The new metric is, how many meaningful, moderately weak ties did I build this week?
What does that actually look like in practice? Give me a weekly schedule.
It means slowing down drastically. A small number of highly researched, personalized contacts per week completely beats running an AI auto-applier 1,000 times.
So quality over quantity.
Yes. If you can dedicate the time to send just 5 to 10 targeted, verified emails to hiring managers using the pain letter framework each week, you will consistently outperform 100 weak generic applications.
So Monday through Friday, my goal is just 1 or 2 brilliant researched emails a day.
Yes, just 1 or 2. Because when you do that, you are manually building the exact weak ties that the 2022 science paper mathematically proved are the true engine of career mobility.
You're bypassing the noise.
You're stepping around the fraud detection velocity traps, you're avoiding the literal-minded keyword filters, and you're bringing a targeted solution directly to a human being who has a problem.
You know, sitting here looking at all this data, the million job cuts, the thousands of bot applications per day, the 7.4-second human review window, it paints a picture of a system that is straining under its own weight. The whole infrastructure feels like it's about to snap.
It is a system in crisis, and it forces us to think deeply about where this is all heading in the next 3 to 5 years.
I agree. And that leaves me with a final sort of provocative thought for you, the listener, to mull over as you go about your week.
Let's hear it.
We've talked about how AI is currently being used to spam a system, right?
Yeah.
Creating a flood of generic synthetic resumes that employers distrust. But AI is only going to get more sophisticated.
Oh, absolutely.
It will eventually reach a point where it can generate perfectly tailored, beautifully written resumes and cover letters, seamlessly optimized for every single semantic nuance of every job description for millions of candidates simultaneously.
The keyword matching won't just be literal anymore.
It
will be a flawless imitation of a perfect candidate across the board.
Right. And when the technology reaches a point where every single applicant looks absolutely flawless on paper, the digital screening system will essentially become useless because it won't be able to tell the difference between a genuine expert and an AI wrapper.
It will just be a wall of perfection.
Exactly. And when that happens, when the written word can no longer be trusted as a signal of competence, will the ultimate unbeatable professional advantage simply be your ability to step outside the digital system entirely? Will the only thing that matters be your ability to pick up the phone, write a personal human note, and prove your authenticity to another human being?
In a world of infinite synthetic noise, the most valuable and rare signal will be genuine human connection.
I think that's exactly right. So step away from the jammed keyhole. Stop fighting the ghost in the machine. Go find the side window. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We strongly encourage you to try this direct approach this week. Pick 5 target companies, use deductive reasoning to find the managers, verify their emails, and write a concise pain letter. See what happens when you bypass the algorithm and talk directly to the humans behind the hiring. We'll see you next time.